Senator Fitzpatrick.
Excused.
Senator Fox.
Here.
Senator Gillespie.
Here.
Senator Noland.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Excused.
Senator Sales.
Here.
Senator Vermeer.
Here.
Chairman Small.
Here. All righty, thank you. Everybody that's here to speak today, please make sure you sign up as a proponent, opponent, or informational witnesses, and turn the ringer off on your cell phone. So, Representative Brockman, let's start with House Bill 281.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Tony Brockman, that's spelled B-R-O-C-K-M-A-N, and I represent House District 9, which is North Kalispell and the community of Evergreen. I bring before you today House Bill 281, an act generally revising the Barrel Preservation Board member term limits. This bill is a part of the Governor's Red Tape Relief Initiative. Montana's Barrel Preservation Board protects burial sites, burial materials, and human skeletal remains from disturbance or destruction when found on state or private lands throughout Montana, and aims to resolve claims for repatriation of human skeletal remains and funerary objects. House Bill 281 extends the term limits from 2 years to 4 years, similar to most other board appointments in our state, as well as providing a transition plan to ensure a smooth transition to those extended terms. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll just speak to the fiscal note. You'll see here it has no impact to the state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will sit down and let opponents, proponents, and informational witnesses speak to the bill. Thank you.
All righty, thank you. Can we get our first proponent, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Boy, those stairs are long. For the record, Lieutenant Governor Kristen Juras, J-U-R-A-S, appearing on behalf of the governor's office in support of this bill. We have over 160 boards, approximately 2,000 appointments per biennium, and this will just, by lengthening the length of this term, give us a little more time to get the right people in place. So we request your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Chairman Small, members of the committee. My name is Don Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S. I'm Chief Legal Counsel for Department of Administration, to which the Burial Board is attached. We fully support the bill, and we're available to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you. Next proponent. All right, do we have any online testimony, JC?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have any opponents in the room? Do we have any informational witnesses? Do we have any questions from the committee? Senator Sales.
Thank you, if I could, for the sponsor, Chair. And so, Chair, Representative, just looking at the fiscal note, it seems that maybe these sites are pretty good hunting areas.
Sorry, that's the wrong fiscal note. That's for Senate Bill 281 instead of House.
We don't have a fiscal note in hand.
Okay, then that would make sense. But I thought maybe I need to get some hunting done.
Yeah, no, we caught that just a little bit ago. Sorry about that. I should have announced it.
I'm sure that there's a bad joke in there somewhere about green grass. But I have a copy of the fiscal note if you would like to borrow it.
I'll be fine. It's just this Class B hunting tags just didn't quite seem to fit.
Yeah, it doesn't fit in the title of this bill, sir.
Yeah, I was going to get a little wild. Okay, do we have any more questions from the committee? Okay, Senator Curdy.
Mr. Chair, for Mr. Harris. I didn't catch your first name.
Don, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Harris, what do you do? I didn't catch it.
Senator Small, Senator Curdy, I'm the Chief Legal Counsel for Department of Administration.
Okay. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Harris. So, I've been here for 9 years, and this is the first I heard of the Burial Preservation Board. Okay? So, just quickly, I know Representative Brockman quickly mentioned some of the things that the board does, but would you just give a quick recap?
Certainly, Chairman Small, Senator Curdy, the board exists to do a number of things. I think the most important of which is to preserve and protect human remains and funerary objects that are discovered within Montana. So, for example, if they're plowing in new fiber optic lines and they discover some human remains, the burial board would help with the disposition of those remains. And the first call usually is to the coroner, and so they make sure that there's not criminal activity involved. Once that's done, then the coroner will get the burial board involved, and they'll look at the objects that are discovered and try to determine their origin and whether there's a way that they can remain in place, or if the landowner wants them to be disinterred, is there a way that they could be reinterred somewhere that is meaningful to, you know, like, for instance, if they were American Indian remains, then they would be interred in within lands that are appropriate for that those remains.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chair. So does the board, Mr. Harris, has the board identified, you know, or the state identified? We have a lot of places out there where, you know, burial has taken place by, you know, for example, Chinese laborers who came to Montana to work on the Milwaukee Railroad, and or other ethnic groups that came out and they were interred in specific areas. And I know one place in Missoula where we had a Chinese internment, and basically a school sits on top of it now. So, I mean, it's long gone, obviously. But so the board does considerable amount of work going out and identifying these places where, you know, pretty much unbeknownst to a lot of folks, these burial places exist. So do you do quite a bit of research then to determine these places? Because
Chairman Small, Senator Curdy, you can probably tell that I don't really do anything like that. But the board members include tribal preservation officers, state historic preservation officers, and they work with local authorities to make sure that that burial site is protected. And like I said, if there's some reason that the remains need to be removed, that they're removed and placed in an appropriate place. I think they also assist museums. When a museum has human remains, they assist museums if need be to make sure that the remains get to where they need to be.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harris, appreciate it.
Would you stay there for 1 second? So I had a question for you. I mean, this seems to be one of the bigger boards, right? I mean, there's 13 people on it.
Yes, sir.
Granted that, you know, the tribes have the, are kind of the biggest part, but what I'm wondering is on first page, line F, the 13th person who's actually put on the board is a representative of the public, What good does that do on a board that large?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure. I know that most boards have a public member who can represent, you know, the citizens of the state at large, and so I would assume that it would be something like that.
Okay. Could I get Lieutenant Governor Juris?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Harris is correct. We try to seek somebody who represents the interests of the Montana citizens at large. The current public member is Mr. Thomas Lavati, who actually has a history in art, he's a historian, and he brings that expertise to the board to help identify different historical aspects that might be associated with any remains that are discovered.
Excellent. Thank you. Do we have any more questions, Senator Nolan?
Or Mr. Harris or Lieutenant Governor, but let me ask the question and then you see who wants to come up. Mr. Chair, have there been, how many instances where are we finding remains? Is there 20? Is there 40 a year? Is there, if we guessed, is there 10 in a I mean, how many times do we?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nolan, it's under 40. The board only meets quarterly, so they do about, you know, 10 to a dozen, I think, a year.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any more questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, would you close on your bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the questions. Good hearing. I ask for a due pass on House Bill 281. Thank you.
All righty, thank you. That concludes the hearing on House Bill 281. Next up, we have House Bill 154.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Tuss, spelled T-U-S-S. I represent House District 28 in Northern Montana, specifically Havre. Today, I'm pleased to present you with House Bill 154 on behalf of the Department of Labor and Industry, which is part of the Governor's Red Tape Relief Initiative. The department was asked to look at onerous, burdensome licensing standards and propose recommendations for the elimination of barriers to work. This specific legislation deals with medication aids and reducing the regulatory burden on these caregivers and the facilities who employ them. House Bill 154 received unanimous support from the House Business and Labor Committee and passed the full House with 93 votes on third reading. Medication aides are specifically trained individuals who are allowed to administer medications in long-term care and assisted living facilities, and by doing so, allowing nurses more time to devote to their higher priority health needs of their patients. Medication aides have been utilized successfully and safely in Montana for years. This legislation does two specific things. One, it reduces the continuing education hours for medication aides from 12 to 6 annually. This assures that medication aides still receive annual updates of relevant information and is more consistent with what many other states also require. Number two, it reduces the number of hours one must work as a CNA before being licensed as a medication aide from 2 years to 1,000 hours, or the equivalent of 6 months of full-time employment. This change in particular works because obtaining the 75 hours of CNA training and passing that test is sufficient to assure that the medication aide has the knowledge and experience to work with nursing home residents. It will also allow medication aides to be available more quickly to help with staffing shortages. Administrators and healthcare professionals for Montana's long-term care and assisted living facilities support this bill in its current form, and I do urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we get our first proponent, please?
Morning, Chair Small, members of the committee. My name is Eric Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S. I'm the administrator for the Employment Standards Division of the Department of Labor and Industry. We're responsible for administering this particular license. Thanks to Representative Tuss for carrying this on our behalf, and thank you to him for doing a very thorough introduction of the bill, and I have nothing to add, so we'll be able to answer any questions. Thanks.
All right, next proponent.
Good morning. My name is Jill Sark. It's spelled S-A-R-K. I represent the Montana Healthcare Association. This association represents long-term care facilities, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and in-home care agencies. I would also like to thank Senator Representative Tuss from Havre for bringing forward this bill. Typically, you would see Rose Hughes, the executive director of Montana Healthcare Association. They pulled me off the bench. She's busy in another bill right now. She asked me to, if I could, have permission to hand out her written testimony. Free. On the back of her testimony, she also provided you with some very thorough facts about medication aides. And I can answer questions, or you might find them there. It was a very thorough opening, so I don't have anything more to add. Thank you.
All righty, thank you. Next proponent.
Good morning, Chair Small and members of the Senate Business, Labor, and Economics Affairs. My name is Heather O'Hara, O'HARA. I'm a master's prepared registered nurse and vice president with the Montana Hospital Association. The Montana Hospital Association supports House Bill 1454 as amended, and with the continuing licensing of medication aids with the changes to continuing education and the CNA requirements. The Montana Hospital Association is a nonprofit organization whose members provide the full spectrum of healthcare services, including hospital inpatient, outpatient, skilled nursing, home health, hospice, assisted living, and senior housing. The skilled nursing and assisted living facility members believe strongly in the role of the medication aides in providing care to our Montana elders. They're a vital part of the care team in providing safe, competent care to our senior Montanans. Thank you, Representative Tuss, in bringing forward House Bill 154 as amended. MHA respectfully requests Senate Business, Labor, and Economics support House Bill 154. Thank you.
Thank you. Next proponent. Seeing none, do we have any opponents in the room? Seeing none, do we have any informational witnesses? And there's nothing online, so. All right, do we have any questions from committee? Senator Curtis?
So, I don't know here. Mr. Strauss.
Chair Small, Senator Curtis.
So, by my calculation, so that usually you figure about an individual works 300 days out of the year, and about 800 or 8 hours a day. That means that by my calculations, normally it would take somebody, what, 52 or 4,800 hours under the old rule.
2 years, yeah.
To get the 2 years, okay? So you're taking a healthy cut here at the number of hours. Everybody on board with this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Curtis, yeah, we worked on those numbers with industry, and they were supportive of that change. As Representative Tuss talked about in his opening, these people are already certified nursing assistants, CNAs, so they've already done some training. So the additional 6 months gives them the skills and the experience to be able to do the medication passing that's provided by this certification.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strauss.
Senator Nolan.
I think if I could ask Mr. Strauss also a question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strauss. So you've probably done some research, or somebody has, on other states that have implemented this. So I'm looking at this. Maybe it's going to free up some full-fledged nurses, I mean, with the full degree, so they can do other things, because we are short. We know that. But have we seen how this has helped other states? Have we had any issues with maybe not getting the right person producing or giving the right shots or aids, whatever?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nolan, to date, we have not had any complaints about medication aids to our licensing board. So in terms of there being malpractice of some sort associated with that profession, we have not seen any evidence of it. I'm unaware of it happening in other states as well. So the primary goal, to your point, is to get more people into these positions to free up nurses to do higher level acuity care.
Okay. Senator Sells. Hold on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then Ms. Strauss. Can you just explain to me, one, how many levels? In reading some of this information, it looks like there is, right, medication aid one, two, and are there others? And then what are the basic differences?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales, there are two levels of medication aids. Medication ones work in assisted living facilities, and medication twos work in long-term care facilities. So we're not doing anything with the medication ones. I don't know in practice what they practically do on the floor in terms of providing support for the nurses, but medication twos are the ones that are primarily responsible for the helping of passing the medications underneath the delegation of a nurse.
Okay, if I could maybe expand that, or at least re-refer that, if there is somebody to, I'm just interested in why this is specific to the aid two position and not looking at one, but maybe there's no issues with one. Can you answer that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales, I can answer that to some degree. So the medication ones don't have the same type of requirements for certification that medication aids twos did. So our effort in this regard was to go look for onerous and burdensome requirements. So we identified that with the medication aid twos. So that's why we recommended the changes with that certification.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for committee? Okay, seeing none, Representative, would you close on your bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. A good hearing, a very thorough hearing. Thank you for the questions for the department, and I urge do pass. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Do you have anybody on this side to carry that? Gets passed on.
I have not talked with anyone, Senator.
Okay, we'll leave it to our discretion. All right, thank you. Representative Mercer, would you open?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and thank you to the committee. I'm here on behalf of the department as one of the three red tape relief bills that I'm sponsoring this session. I'm Bill Mercer. I represent House District 46 in Billings. This is House Bill 115, and I'm going to take a quick cruise through the bill. This one is really very straightforward. In a nutshell, it is attempting to, in Section 1 and really just Section 1, set forth a cease and desist opportunity for the department to stop those things that you see beginning on line 27 on page 1 and then extending through the top line 2 on page 2. So if you've got somebody that's practicing without a license, if they are doing something without meeting the requirements for a restricted title or designation, or if they're doing something in violation of a statute or a rule, the department is attempting to consolidate in this new section the authority that it wants to stop that activity. Now, you might say, well, how are they doing that right now? And so that's where I want to do the quick cruise through the bill. So if you start really on page 3, on line 26, you'll notice that what is happening in this section and a number of other existing sections of law, the scheme for enforcement was actually bringing a misdemeanor prosecution. So the government had the authority to say, we want to prosecute someone who is doing something in violation of 3733501. This bill eliminates those misdemeanor criminal provisions and instead says, the department wants the authority to get the cease and desist executed so that they can stop the conduct, and they have concluded that it's the most efficient way to do that isn't through misdemeanor prosecutions. You'll see on page 4 the same thing. On line 20, line 17 through 20, that misdemeanor provision is being stricken. The same thing on line page 5, line 18 and 19, a misdemeanor provision is being stricken. Page 6, lines 16 and 17, a misdemeanor provision is being stricken. And then you will note that on page 7, you've got a revision in the compliance provision on page 14, just referring back to enforcement through this new Section 1. And then finally, Section 9 on page 8, there was reference to a civil penalty that could be pursued. Once again, this will all be handled through this new cease and disorder mechanism. So how would that work? There's a screening panel you will see is noted on page 2, line 6. The board and or the department will have a screening panel of a board or the department will decide whether to pursue a cease and desist order. If that is something that's issued, if the person doesn't comply with it, they'd be subject to a fine. And then if either the board, not its screening panel, but the board or the department believed that it needed to do something more, it could go to district court and seek either an injunction or a civil remedy. So I think in some ways this is really in the spirit of the red tape initiative. It's designed to say we want a mechanism to stop the conduct that is not in compliance with the statutory scheme. And it is more efficient and frankly more proper to do it through that civil mechanism than have criminal provisions that the department could use to bring a misdemeanor case. So I'm sure if you've got technical questions, Mr. O'Connor, Mr. Strauss would be happy to address them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Can we get our first proponent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Quinlan O'Connor. I'm Chief Legal Counsel for the Department of Labor and Industry. First of all, we want to thank Representative Mercer for carrying this bill. As you mentioned, this is the most straightforward of our red tape relief bills, as Ms. Sullivan well knows from all of her excellent efforts in getting them drafted for us. I'll just walk very quickly through the bill. Representative Mercer did a good job covering it. I just want to make it very clear, and you've got a couple of handouts with you as well. That sort of explain exactly what's going on. We've had some questions about whether, you know, this is board authority or department authority, and so I think that walks through clearly what is within the department's authority and what's within the board's authority. But more or less, this is a progressive discipline theory. So rather than having 32 different ways of going after unlicensed practice, we're going to have one way of going after unlicensed practice, so it's clear for us and it's clear for the public what exactly happens in the event of unlicensed practice. So at step one of that, if the department becomes aware of unlicensed practice, we can issue a cease and desist. Essentially, we issue and serve by process server a letter that says you're engaged in the practice of whatever licensed occupation it is, you have to stop. If that doesn't work, then it can go to the screening panel of the licensing board. If there is a board, we have 32 licensing boards and 9 programs that are not under licensing boards. If there isn't one, it's just going to come to the department. But the screening panel or the department can issue a monetary fine for each day of violation. If that doesn't work, the screening panel or the department, same idea, can get together and say we should pursue injunctive relief. This means we file an action in district court, and the district court tells the person, no, really, you need to stop engaging in unlicensed practice. And if that finally doesn't work, then there is a criminal penalty associated with violating the injunction order. So there are multiple steps here, each of which is designed at the lowest level possible and as quickly as possible to stop unlicensed practice of whatever the trade happens to be. I will say there have been very few, and I say a few because I rarely say never, but I'm unaware of a criminal prosecution for unlicensed practice, but we want the tool available to us in the instance that somebody really is refusing to abide by the cease and desist, the monetary fine, and the injunction order that the district court issues. Then apparently at that stage we need another tool available to us. We don't really expect to prosecute people, but to the extent that that becomes necessary, the tool needs to be available. I'm happy to answer any questions, but that really is the gist of the bill. We're replacing 64 statutes with one, and we're making it simpler and easier for everybody to understand what exactly is going on, as I say, as opposed to 32 unique ways of prosecuting unlicensed practice. Happy to answer any questions.
All righty, thank you. Do we have another proponent? No online testimony. Do we have any opponents in the room? Do we have an informational witness? All right, questions from the committee. Mr. O'Connor, could we?
Chair Small.
Can you give us a couple actual examples of unlicensed practice that you've run into?
Absolutely. So, for example, there have been in the trades an electrician who goes around and claims to be able to do electrical work for folks, but without actually having an electrical license. And so we would need to shut that down. Under current law, the electrical, plumbing, and realty reg boards all have a provision for a contested case hearing through the Department's Office of Administrative Hearings. And so we pursue it in that way. In theory, you could also sue in district courts with a separate authority to attempt to stop the unlicensed practice, but it's all a little bit different, and then what the criminal penalties are a little different per board. But that's often where it's coming up, is in those areas. We have had unlicensed practice of denturetry as well. That case, we were able to pursue injunctive relief in district court. That was recently affirmed by the Montana Supreme Court about a month ago.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Kirby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. O'Connor, Mr. Chair and Mr. O'Connor, on page 2, when you talk about the screening panel and may assess a penalty of not more than $1,000 a day. So we're giving this type of authority to a panel. I'm just wondering about the legality of, you know, where this group has that authority to do so. Usually those are left to say, a justice of peace or something like that. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Curdy, in fact, the boards have monetary fining authority already.
Oh, is that right?
And it's just different based on each of the boards on what the level is. Sometimes it's 500. Sometimes I believe we have one that's 10,000. But it just depends on the board. The department also has numerous programs that have monetary fining authority. There's a bill going through the session to increase that authority. But anyway, $1,000 is fairly common for departmental programs. But it varies from program to program. But no, it is something that the department does have the authority to do. Pursuing and collecting on that is somewhat different, and that's, you know, obviously if somebody is refusing to pay, then that's something that gets pursued in district court, and there can be separate remedies to challenge the availability of the penalty at that stage. But no, the boards do have that authority. About the screening panel in particular, so the licensing boards are split really into two pieces, and that is under statutory authority as well. And the first is the screening panel, and the second is the adjudicatory panel. And so what that means is you have a full board, which is responsible for the overarching duties of the board, things like rulemaking, setting the actual standards of practice, the scope of practice, those sorts of things. But there's a screening panel that is half of the board, which looks at complaints that gets filed against particular licensees and can find cause or no cause to prosecute the license. After a license prosecution, then it'll go to the adjudicatory panel, the other half of the board, and they're segregated and walled off from each other to mete out whatever the discipline is based on the unprofessional conduct that's proven. So the screening panels are something that's already in place statutorily for the purpose of finding violations of the statutes. And so that's why this bill uses that screening panel process to say, you know, here is somebody engaged in the practice of the trade improperly. And so we find a reason to believe that we need to pursue a remedy against them to stop that unlicensed practice.
Follow up.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. O'Connor, so you've never been challenged by someone as to that process?
On the screening panel process?
Uh-huh.
No, the screening panel process is statutorily established by this body. It works well. It keeps the two sides separated from each other so that there isn't overlap between the two pieces. There is a prohibition on screening panel members being part of the adjudicatory panel and vice versa. But no, it seems to work quite well.
Okay, follow up again.
So one last one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. O'Connor, on page three, section three at the bottom. So why in this entire bill do you bring up masseuses and to some extent process servers? I'm curious.
Absolutely, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Curdy. So what you'll see in sections 3 through 9 of the bill, Title 37 is uniquely drafted through a number of years. And so what's happened in that process, and this is part of what we're attempting to correct with another bill that hopefully you'll be hearing before too long, but what ends up happening is sort of a Frankenstein approach. You end up putting different pieces of code that are doing the same thing in different sections and drafting them differently from each other. And so what in some of these sections, all of the repealed sections, the 64 sections that we're just taking out, the sole purpose of those statutes was cease and desist authority, criminal penalty, whatever that unlicensed practice is. What you're seeing in sections 3 through 9 of the bill are where that remedy was put into another section that was unrelated. So, for example, you see the license required and title protection in section 3 for massage therapy. That also happened to have this enjoining unlawful practice provision within it. And so we can't repeal that entire section in this bill because that's not doing what we're attempting to do with the bill. Instead, we're striking a particular subsection of it. And that's, as I say, each of these sections. So, yeah, you've got massage therapy, private security, the state electrical board, plumbing, are the ones that we're discussing in those pieces because a particular subsection needs to go away rather than the entire section to effectuate the purpose.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Connor for staying up there. So I guess going a little further on this and on the ground, if this 115 moves forward and gets implemented, the way I understand it, and correct me, I guess, if I'm wrong, these complaints would come to the department, not necessarily to the board. And I guess my impetus of that question is speed of getting right a result. Some of these boards only meet quarterly or whatever, to where this, if I'm following it right, it actually goes to the department, which should be a fairly effective and quick response to that complaint.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales, two parts to that, but yes, they're going to come to the department. And yes, that is so that we can act quickly on them. That's why the cease and desist authority is given to the department. The second piece, just to be aware, is all complaints come to the department, no matter who has the authority. We do the initial intake of all complaints, put them in a board book, and present them to the boards where the boards have authority over them. And so all complaints of all kinds are coming to us, whether it's for unlicensed practice or for other things. We get about 1,000 occupational licensing complaints against licensees a year across the 32 boards, and we process all of those and present those to the screening panels. Those are obviously not evenly broken down across the 32 boards, but where it is outside of where somebody doesn't have a license, then we process that, as I say, in different ways. But yeah, they're all of those complaints come to the department.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any more questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, could you close on your bill?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think you've covered it exhaustively, so appreciate the good hearing. If there are other questions, I'd be happy to answer them later. Thank you.
All righty. That concludes the hearing on House Bill 115.
I just wanted to make a comment, committee. There's some really good pie over here. I ate one whole piece during committee. Apologize, but it was so tempting and it was so good. Thank you.
Okay, let's sort some stuff out here. We can do EA today. House Bill 144, 155, 187, 263, and 281 from today.
I'm handing out a coordination amendment for House Bill 155, and I can explain it real quick. Can you get it? So if you look on the back, committee members, section 9 is a coordination section, and this just says that if House Bill 127, which we will hear later this week, is passed and approved, and if it repeals section 16-4-103, then section 2 of this act, which is an amendment section, is void. So that is all. It's just a coordination instruction in this amendment. And then I have another amendment to pass out for House Bill 187. Here you go. Need more. And this amendment is House Bill 187.3.1, and this is just in section one, and it strikes the amendments that were done in the House and brings new section one back to its original language. And so it just, it removes the definitions of family daycare and group home or daycare as defined in 52-2-703. So that's what that amendment does, Mr. Chair.
You guys want to take 15, 20 minutes here? Or? I don't think there was. Okay, let's come back together and we'll do executive action. And Mr. Vice Chair, if you would, we'll start with House Bill 144.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 144 be concurred in.
Motion has been made. House Bill 144 be concurred in. We can probably do a voice vote on that. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Senator Pope is aye by proxy.
Okay, and I'll take that one.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 155 by Zolnikoff be concurred in. That's an act generally revising alcohol beverage laws, revising definitions, revising licensure laws.
Okay, the motion has been made to move House Bill 155 be concurred in. Do we have an amendment?
Yes. We do? Yeah. Oh, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 155 to be amended HBO 1055.002.001 be concurred in, Mr. Chair.
This motion has been made, House Bill 015 for amendment HB 0155.002.001. That'll be a due pass, right, on the amendment?
Okay, due pass, Mr. Chair.
Due pass. Do we have any discussion? Do you want to shuffle us through that amendment real quick?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is just a coordination amendment that will coordinate with House Bill 127 if passed. And all it will do is repeal Section 2 of this bill because House Bill 127 repeals 16-4-103. So that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any discussion on the amendment?
Question.
Question's been called. Let's take a voice vote on do pass on amendment 155.002.001. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Senator Pope votes aye by proxy.
Okay, amendment passes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 155.
This one's amended.
To be concurred in as amended.
Okay, the motion has been made to move House Bill 155 as once amended be concurred in. Do we have any discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. Let's do a voice vote. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Senator Pope is aye by proxy.
We know who takes that one.
Do we have a volunteer to carry that bill? Okay. It's all right.
Okay.
Okay. Next up.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 187 be concurred in.
Motion has been made. Move House Bill 187 be concurred in. Do we have any? Well, let's. Do we have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 187 be amended with 1018.007.003.001 do pass.
Motion has been made to move House Bill amendment HB 187.003.001 do pass. Do we have any discussion? Senator Fitzpatrick.
I'm going to vote no on the amendment, Mr. Chair. I think it is a little, I realize it's the way the bill was originally drafted, but I think the way it's been amended in the House, I like that, and I think that's the better way to go.
Thank you. Do we have any more discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too, you know, after listening to the sponsor and then and the reason why the House put on that amendment and giving it some sideboards, to me, seems to cover some of those concerns that they've heard and then that we also heard, rather than leaving it wide open. So I'll be a no on this amendment.
Okay, thank you. Senator Curdy.
A question.
Question has been called. We will do a roll call vote on Amendment HB 187.003.001.
Senator Curdy.
No.
President Ellsworth.
No.
Senator Fitzpatrick. Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Gillespie.
No.
Senator Noland.
Yes.
Senator Pope.
Senator Pope votes no by proxy.
Senator Sales.
No.
Senator Vermeer.
No.
Chairman Small.
Nope. Motion fails. So we'll go back to our previous motion, and House Bill 187 has been moved to concur. I'm sure we can do. Oh, do we have discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. Let's
just do a voice.
Let's do a voice vote. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pope votes aye by proxy.
Okay, motion carries. Do we have a volunteer for a carrier on that one? Senator Fitzpatrick?
Chair, I move. Are we ready?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 263 by Regeer be concurred in.
Motion has been made to move House Bill 263 be concurred in. Do we have any discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pope is aye by proxy.
Okay, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 281 by Brockman be concurred in.
Motion has been made to move House Bill 281 be concurred in. Do we have any discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. All in favor of due concurrence of House Bill 281, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Mr. Chair, President Ellsworth is aye by proxy.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Pope is aye by proxy.
Okay, do we have a volunteer on that one? Senator Gillespie. Oh, Amy's bill, the eye drops.
The which one?
Eye drop bill. I couldn't do
you
it.
Betty, I mean,
I'll do it.
You do, okay.
Okay.
That's 180. Oh, that's 263.
All right, thank you. That was a good day. That concludes Senate Business and Labor. We'll be back here tomorrow for four resolutions. It'll be fun.
Promise?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do 8:30.